The Legiones Astartes possessed at their height a panoply of war unrivaled by any military formation the Imperium has outfitted since. While paling in comparison to what surviving records of the Dark Age of Technology claim the soldiery of the old human stellar empires wielded, what had survived the Age of Strife were amongst the most brutal and devastating weapon and armor systems ever created by human hands. Perhaps far more so, given the benighted state of galactic technology following humanity's great fall millennia before. The Astartes themselves were a weapon system like no other, and when wedded with war gear that befit their transhuman brutality, it is easy to understand Imperium's phenomenal pace of expansion and conquest during the Great Crusade. Many, far too many, of these ancient technologies are forever lost to us in the era Indomitus. The secrets of their manufacture, claimed by the remorseless passage of time under the specter of endless war and dogmatic thinking. We yet, however, retain records of their existence and history, worthy lessons in the face of encroaching apocalypse. Know then, that this is a record of an armor mark unlike any other, a product of a unique compact forged within the Imperium's earliest days, a record of Saturnine Terminator armor. The long and terrible years of the Age of Strife destroyed connections millennia old, not just between star systems, but within star systems themselves. As one's record upon the solar reclamation will no doubt elucidate acolytes upon in its entirety, suffice it to say, the worlds of humanity's birth star held little love for one another during the trials of Old Night. The rivalry between Terra and Mars is legendary, as is the former's descent into wholesale anarchy and the latter's recovery under the leadership of the Mechanicum. Similarly, the gas giants, Jupiter and Saturn, developed deep enmities, although the Jovian Void clans faced horror under the yoke of cruel Xenos oppressors, and the Saturnine Ordo was forced to become a deeply militaristic society in order to defend its very existence. Dwelling within the shadows of these larger polities, squatting within the deep dark of the outer solar planets, was the Saturnine moon of Phoebe. While first settlement of the moon occurred in the far distant past, during the Age of Strife, the planetoid had become home to an enclave of renegade technologists and artificers who had been exiled from Mars by the dogmatic Mechanicum. Quite what the original crimes of these individuals was, history does not record. Details of their heresies were buried by the Imperium, and no doubt perished in the death of innocence on Mars. What can be established was that they were isolationist in the extreme. Indeed, prior to the arrival of the Emperor of Mankind in 797 M30, Phoebe had had no contact with any other worlds, moons, or arcologies within its local volume, perhaps even for centuries. It is believed that the Emperor ventured to the Tech Enclave under a pall of secrecy. Given the year in question, we can surmise that this took place as the Master of Mankind's legions and fleets sought to expel the Xenos rulers of Jupiter, and to bring the human polities of Saturn under the rule of the Imperium. What talks took place were brief. The Tech Enclave was, for all their isolation, highly aware of the activities of this Emperor of Terra, and all the wars that he had been conducting within Sol's light for years now. They were also aware of the price of defiance. That being said, however, the Emperor clearly wished for Phoebe to be brought under his banner without bloodshed, for the benefits to his realm would be significant. Negotiations were quickly concluded, and an accord was drawn. In classic imperial maneuvering, The Tech Enclave of Phoebe was deemed to fall outside the scope of the Treaty of Olympus that the Emperor had forged with the Mechanicum of Mars. Phoebe, as an exile realm from Mars, was not governed by any accord with the Red Planet, declared the Emperor, and would now be subsumed into the Imperium, under his personal protection and control via the Imperial Household. The legal grounds for this were shaky at best, but the Emperor's rule was despotic, and this was no doubt a calculated gamble on his part that the still young treaty, one that was very beneficial with Mars, would be worth more to the Fabricator General than a fight over a tiny moon with a mere several thousand exiles aboard. History proved the Emperor correct in this regard. Mars chose to overlook the matter entirely. What the Master of Mankind demanded in exchange for his patronage was simple. The Lords of Phoebe were to create for him arms and armaments that the dogma of the machine cult would otherwise forbid or shy away from pursuing. The most significant of these developments was the creation of Saturnine Terminator armor. The Phoebean Accord granted the Tech Enclave the sole responsibility for the design and development of a wholly new pattern of powered armor for the Emperor's Astartes legions. This demand was bound within the writ of procurement, mandating the manufacture of the armor, but also the disclosure to the Emperor of the full scope of any technological discoveries and developments that were incurred throughout the process, to be delivered by the Enclave's representative directly to the Imperial Household. No involvement of the Mechanicum was permitted. Defiance of any of this would constitute the dissolution of the writ and the loss of Phoebe's independence as an Imperial Household protectorate, potentially opening them up to the full wrath of the Martian priesthood and almost certain annexation. The Lords of Phoebe had nothing in the way of choice in this matter. Whether or not they were aware of the fate of, well, for example, the now much-reduced Selenar gene cults, it would have been extremely obvious that the new Imperial status quo was the only way to continue existence. Enclaves such as themselves, in possession of deeply specialized knowledge, were simply subsumed into the Imperium, or annihilated. The arts of Phoebe were long diverged from those of Mars. Whatever crimes had led to the original banishment, the adepts of the Saturnine Moon possessed significantly different knowledge and technological bases from their contemporaries on the Red Planet, including data from the Dark Age of Technology, seemingly possessed by none save themselves. The history of Terminator armor itself is unclear and riven with contradictions. It is known that the first armor marks that history can consider to be Terminator pattern were in use on Terra itself during the Unification Wars, although it is not certain whether this was a formalized, mass-produced pattern akin to the Mark I power armor worn by the Thunder Warriors of the Legio Cetacis and the original Space Marines of the Legiones Astartes. What records remain note that the first Terminator suits were combinations of Mark I power armor with varieties of exo-armor that had survived the Age of Strife. Originally designed by ancient humanity to protect baseline humans against the dangers of interstellar travel, such as orbital debris, stellar radiation, accidental reactor leaks, exo-armor was militarized by Terran scientists in order to transform these mundane purposes into personal defense, which was laterally incorporated by the Emperor's legions. It is highly likely that the multiple and idiosyncratic dreadnought prototypes, such as the Ironsides of Terra's Old Albia, influenced early Terminator development. Mars, upon the conclusion of the Treaty of Olympus, was granted full authority over the development and design of standardized Terminator armor, eventually leading to the large-scale production of the fearsome Cataphractii pattern, around the same time as the release of the Mark III Crusade pattern power armor to the Space Marine Legions. It was in tandem with these efforts that the Forges of Phoebe labored for the production of the Saturnine pattern. Taking similar approaches to the Priests of Mars, the Tech Enclave pursued a form of exo-armor that had been specifically designed to function within the impossible temperatures and radiological deluges of plasma reactors. The Emperor, of course, had no need for ancient civilian tools, but the Saturnine pattern was anything but. The prototype suits proved almost invulnerable to mundane ammunition, and had notable resistances to energy weaponry, a design through-line from their exo-armor predecessors, augmented by inbuilt shield generators. Key to the armor's success were miniaturized reactors of staggering efficiency, born of the Tech Enclave's Dark Age data looms. The reactors generated far more surplus energy than standard power armor, or even Terminator armor power banks and motive technology, offering surplus energy to exotic armor systems. This power could handily be stored within an advanced capacitator matrix, capable of being rerouted by the wearer at the speed of thought to cope with the most arduous battlefield situations. These included the specialized weaponry that the Adepts of Phoebe created specifically for the Saturnine armor. One suspects this specificity was both to demonstrate to the Emperor their value, and to jealously ensure they alone retained the ability to produce so valuable an array of war gear. That being said, several of these weapon systems were equally likely to be products of the Emperor's own dispensation, for he was known to have shared with the Tech Enclave secrets held by the Imperial Household, much to the chagrin of Mars. Particle shredders, for example, are borne exclusively by Saturnine suits, and specialized formations granted household dispensation, like the Legio Custodes or certain divisions of the First Legion Dark Angels. The drawback to the armor mark was, of course, its sheer size and bulk, as characterized by the almost comically immense pauldrons that contained the suit's shield generators. It was made even more ponderous than the competing cataphractii plate. Ablative plating, supported by the servo-powered exoskeleton, was a miracle of design, to be sure, but nevertheless placed immense burdens upon the wearer. Likewise, and uniquely, the cognitive strain on the Astartes ensconced within was extremely high, stressing the absolute limits of the cerebro-armorial interface technology permitted by a Space Marine's subdermal black carapace neural web. To function, it required Astartes that possessed an innate degree of cybertheurgic resonance, a specific form of latent psychic potential that allows for technological manipulation. This is almost certainly one of the key points of divergence between Phoebe and Mars. The Red Planet had strictly limited all research into psychically powered technology for centuries, owing to the ravages of the Age of Strife. While the systems that powered the Saturnine plate were minimal compared to some of the more grotesque technological developments of that benighted epoch, Mars would have almost certainly refused to pioneer any such systems, even at the Emperor's behest, at least those intended for full-scale military applications for the Astartes legions. The Emperor, in tandem, was also known to quite voraciously seize upon and secure technology related to psychic arts. It is possible that he shared some measure of this arcana with the Adepts of Phoebe. Regardless, what these developments produced was a wholly unique and wholly lethal armor suit and weapons platform for use by the Legiones Astartes, one completely divergent from all other armor families that the legions yet held. Supply issues would initially be the most significant barrier to the armor rollout for the legions. The Forges of Phoebe only had so much capacity. The plate itself required significant amounts of rare material to manufacture. In most any other circumstance, the idea that a tech enclave of the moon size could be expected to outfit 20 legions of space marines would be laughable. But logistics issues were smoothed over by the patronage of the Imperial Household. Saturnine Terminator armor was immediately highly prized. It offered by far the greatest degree of personal protection an Astartes could be afforded, Legion Commander spoke highly of its ability to be placed within the teeth of the worst of battlefields, against the strongest of enemies, and allow its wearers to emerge unscathed with the foe annihilated. It excelled, both offensively and defensively. The relative short range of its weaponry was little concern in advance. Despite its somewhat cumbersome speed, lines could easily be broken by squads of Saturnine Astartes once contact had been made. Indeed, the armor was frequently used in mass teleport assaults by legions that possessed that specific technology. In defense, the endurance afforded allowed Astartes to be nigh immovable barriers to hordes of Xenos, or human, adversaries, holding positions for days on end if need be. Naturally, the armor became the de facto choice for deployment in the early Great Crusade's most hazardous operations, and against the most vicious or unknowable of enemies. Many tales, eagerly repeated by early Imperial iterators, were told of Astartes emerging from being literally buried underneath the corpses of the slain, their Saturnine armor scoured of heraldry, but fully intact in form. These suits were tended to exclusively by the tech adepts of Phoebe herself, delegated to the legions from the moon. Hooded, mysterious, and living separate lives from both the legion and any attendant Mechanicum forces, but known by all to bear the authority of the Emperor via their status as his protectorate. The initial phases of staggering success began eventually, however, to give way to yet more logistical issues. As the Adepts of Phoebe were the only ones capable and legally permitted to repair and maintain Saturnine armor, and as the Great Crusade was expanding at an almost exponential rate, the demands placed upon the Tech Enclave did eventually outstrip its ability to meet. Many expeditionary fleets were forced to stockpile damaged or inoperable Saturnine suits simply because there was no adept available to work upon them, forcing them to be placed in stasis fields until they could reconvene with a fleet that possessed a functioning Phoebean delegation, or the suits could be shipped all the way back to Sol. The attrition of the Saturnine plate was a constant issue from that point onwards, one that the Imperium was unable to rectify even as the legions expanded further into the galaxy and more Primarchs were reunited with their Gene Sons. The Primarchs, variously, became familiar with the pattern in wholly different ways. Horus Lupercal, the first found, was highly experienced in fielding mass formations of Saturnine armored Astartes, as were the Primarchs Mortarion and Perturabo, owing to their particular proclivities in war-making. Corvus Corax, for example, however, was only reunited with the 19th Legion Raven Guard a century later, and had known little need or use for such a system. Through persistent logistical issues, and the development of the legions and their fighting styles themselves, the Saturnine armor had largely fallen out of favor by the outbreak of the Horus Heresy. Newer suit patterns, such as the more agile Tartaros pattern Terminator armor, or those with relative ease of manufacture and maintenance, such as a Cataphractii plate, had superseded the Saturnine pattern, which had become relegated to specialized detachments or for use in the most dire of circumstances. Into this situation, and the history of the pattern of armor, came the Primarch Vulcan of the 18th Legion Salamanders. An artificer beyond peer, Vulcan had made it a particular mission of his to uncover the secrets of the Saturnine plate. Seeing its obviously clear advantages, and unwilling to allow such priceless technology to be surrendered for what were, on face value, base logistical bottlenecks, the Primarch labored in examining, deconstructing, and reconstructing Saturnine armor. Only a son of the Emperor could possibly have taken such a course of action. It contravened not only the accords of the Treaty of Olympus in Martian hegemony over technological development, but also the protectorate of Phoebe's independence and exclusivity by the Imperial household. The Emperor clearly turned a blind eye to this behavior, as he did with many of his sons during those later Crusade years. Certainly, the sin of curiosity and quest for technological efficiency was vastly eclipsed in severity by the genocidal atrocities of the Night Haunter, for example. The result of the 18th Primarch's years of diligent efforts were a number of subtle substitutions and alterations to the Saturnine design. Its efficacy, especially those of its most advanced systems, was preserved, but crucially, the armor was liberated from the clutches of the Phoebean adepts. Vulcan's new Saturnine suits would now be able to not only be prepared, but also manufactured by all Mechanicum Forge worlds, and maintained by adepts aboard expedition fleets, as well as Legion tech marines. The schema that Vulcan distributed were dispatched to all legions in an act of fraternal generosity, for the good of the Great Crusade and the Imperium, such that its warriors would now have the full benefit of all technology that humanity possessed. While Vulcan had done this on several occasions in the past, the soon-to-be-called Saturnine Bestowal was his most seismic, allowing the legions to retrofit their Saturnine stock, as well as place manufacturing orders for whole new wings of the armor. The price of this was not to become clear until several dreadful months later. The timing of the bestowal could not have been more ill. Vulcan had delivered his new Saturnine schema to his brothers as Horus, the War Master, was already making for the Istvan system, supposedly to put down a recidivist uprising on the third planet. Thus, Vulcan delivered into the hands of not only the four traitor legions that would soon declare for the Emperor, but also the legions that would later turn turncoat and annihilate his sons on the black sands of Istvan V. The First Legion, Dark Angels, possessed a stock of original Saturnine armor that far surpassed that of their fellow legions, owing to their specific role as annihilators of the galaxy's most dangerous species and entities. That being said, by the outbreak of heresy hostilities, their field-effective suits had been totally eclipsed by their inoperable suits, awaiting repairs by the Phoebean adepts. Ever paranoid of outside influence and subversion, the Lion accepted his brother's offer, but bade his legion savants scrutinize the schema with utmost diligence. The process took over a year before the Dark Angels considered the plans safe for manufacture and rollout, by which point the Legion was becoming embroiled in the vicious Thramas Crusade against the 8th Legion Night Lords. Notably, the Dark Angels opted for such all-out warfare that their entire surviving cache of Saturnine plate was deployed by the Dreadwing in the form of the Naufragia Terminator Divisions, responsible for breaking the hosts of the Night Lords on over a dozen separate engagements across the volume. For the 7th Legion, Imperial Fists, the end of the Great Crusade saw the majority of their legacy Saturnine suits held within their mobile star fortress Phalanx, deep within the Temple of Oaths, and lauded as relics of victories past. They were considered a bygone concern, given the Legion's new role as the Emperor's Praetorians upon Terra. But given the outbreak of the heresy, this rapidly changed. Rogel Dorn assigned all battle-ready suits, and those that had already been given Vulcan's modifications, to the Retribution fleet he dispatched in the wake of the Istvan III atrocity. Secondary to this, the Primarch immediately ordered batches of the armor for the Legion upon Terra to further reinforce the palace. While the Retribution fleet debacle was ultimately a failure, the rapid procurement of the armor by Dorn outfitted Imperial Fist starships for teleport assaults in subsequent years, proving decisive in numerous probing engagements made by the traitors upon the Sol system's defenses. Far across the galaxy, the heritage quality of the Saturnine plate saw the majority of the Ultramarines as operational battle armor assigned to the instructor chapters of the 24th and 25th, the so-called Evocatii, charged with training the Legion's many, many inductees. This proved useful, if not exactly decisive, when the World Eater and Word Bearer forces of the Shadow Crusade fell on the Ultramarines' recruitment worlds. Gilliman had wasted no time in accepting Vulcan's schema, and rushed to bring the Legion's inoperable suits to Kalth, intending to hurriedly retrofit them alongside the muster that was taking place there. Of course, unknowing of the grand treachery unfolding across the stars. When the Kalth atrocity began, these Saturnine suits became icons around which survivors should rally. The few that managed to survive the massacre were later honored with heraldry befitting their veterancy. Upon Baal and Canopus, the garrison and training forces of the 9th Legion Blood Angels, unable to contact the majority of their legion that had seemingly vanished in the Cygnus Cluster, took it upon themselves to initiate limited trials of Vulcan's new Saturnine patterns. Naturally, once hostilities with the traitors broke out fully, these tests were rushed into full production as part of a massive arms and armament buildup this portion of the Legion undertook. The new suits served the Blood Angels well. The numerous attacks and sieges that Baal suffered in the early years of the Heresy were oft decisively broken by Saturnine-patterned Astartes. Sanguinius himself, once freed from Cygnus and delivered to Gilliman's Imperium Secundus, had his legion outfitted by Ultramar's forges. However, the unspeakable experiences of the Cygnus disaster weighed heavily upon the warriors of the 9th Legion. It is recorded that interfacing with the psychic technology of the Saturnine Plate awakened memories and desires within those Astartes that very few could bear. Those that could were dark characters indeed, lending the armor an ill repute within the Legion. The 5th Legion White Scars, never ones for static or ponderous warfare and technology, possessed likely the smallest quantity of original Saturnine suits out of all of the legions. However, the Khan's staunch support for Magnus the Red's Librarius project, and the traditions of the Legion's Stormseers, had seen the Sons of Jagatai play a rather unique role in Vulcan's years of study in the Saturnine redevelopment, resulting in the Scars, by proportion, having potential access to a larger stock of Saturnine plate at the outbreak of the Heresy, at least compared to their legion's numbers. This was impacted, of course, by the sheer length of the Chondax campaign and the subsequent travails in the warp ahead of the Second Battle of Prospero. The legion, ever adaptable, took to utilizing the armor as part of teleport assaults, forcing a breach in enemy defenses or effecting behind-the-lines incursions, allowing for encirclement by White Scar jet bikes, land speeders, and mechanized infantry. In very typical fashion, the approach of the 6th Legion Space Wolves to the Saturnine Bestowal was utterly contradictory. The burning of Prospero had savaged the Legion in extremity, and those that survived were extremely ill-disposed to adopting technology with such a significant psychic component, despite, of course, the Legion's poorly kept open secret of psychic traditions. That being said, the severe disadvantage in numbers, arms, and armaments the Legion was under at the beginning of the Heresy left it grasping for whatever it could get hold of, and it rapidly approved the new Vulcan armor for mass production. The Space Wolves' eventual dedicated Terminator wings were formed, but shadowed by fell reputations. All Saturnine divisions were accompanied by a Speaker of the Dead, itself a unique dual role of chaplain and apothecary in charge of both the Legion's spiritual needs and genetic future, a tradition the Legion saw as utterly intertwined. The other 6th Legion Astartes dubbed these Terminators as Droger, a Fenrisian term for a dead spirit. It is rumored in historiography that those assigned to these squads were great Crusade veterans of the Legion's most unspeakable operations, ones who had not been given the psychomimetic obliteration others had been granted to spare them of such terrible memories. Of all the Loyalist legions that would be the first to deploy Saturnine plate against the traitors, the 10th Legion Iron Hands and their Primarch Ferus Manus had long viewed Saturnine armor as a wholly outdated relic, an inefficient and grossly costly technology, worthy only for preservation for the sake of future study. To the Iron Tenth, it had been rendered obsolete by innovations in Terminator armor, including the Legion's own bespoke Gorgon pattern plate, developed by their Primarch. Additionally, slaved automata could also be called upon in large numbers by the Iron Hands, the loss and replacement of which was far less costly than those of Saturnine Terminators. Ferris Manus had sequestered the majority of the originally issued suits for study and development of other technologies, like the aforementioned Gorgon suits, although historians have examined the Legion and Divisio Militaris' records, noting that this, even combined with battlefield attrition, does not account for the full complement of the Legion's original armor. Some, with access to records largely forbidden, have speculated that certain aspects of the Saturnine suits, shared with the chthonic and heretical technologies of the Vaults of Mimir, suggest that the Iron Tenth were using Saturnine suits for wholly esoteric paths of research and development. The 19th Legion Raven Guard had a curious relationship with Saturnine armor. For most of the Legion's early history, they had existed under the patronage of Horus Lupercal and his 16th Legion, acting almost as a specialized division of the Luna Wolves than their own actual Legion. Despite the vast quantity of Saturnine suits Horus had access to, the 19th abjured their use. The ponderous bulk was completely ill-suited to the Legion's subtle subterfuge and highly mobile means of warfare. The exception were the Legion's so-called Deliverers, a formation maintained for whenever the 19th required a line-breaking devastation that only Saturnine armor was capable of meting out. These squads were almost wholly Terran-born Raven Guard, and would thus largely meet their end at the calamitous Battle of Gate 42. The survivors of that battle, along with many of the Deliverers, were dispatched with the nomad predation fleets that Korax ordered the formation of, with scant few remaining within the Legion, and even fewer in the aftermath of the Dropside Massacre. Those Deliverers that somehow managed to survive each of these separate trials, knowing their Primarch did not favor the use of the Legion's meager resources on the production of such antithetical war gear, would go on to specifically target traitor stockpiles, meaning that by the end of the Heresy, the vast majority of Raven Guard Saturnine Terminator armor had been purloined from traitor forces. Finally, the 18th Legion Salamanders had at the outbreak of the Heresy the greatest quantity of Saturnine suits of any Legion by sheer numbers, with their Primarch Vulcan having been instrumental in the technology's resurrection. When the news of Horus's betrayal reached the Imperium, and when Vulcan found himself swept up in the righteous fury that brought him and his brothers to the black sands of Istvan V in pursuit of Imperial vengeance, he did so alongside the entire complement of new pattern Saturnine plate that his Legion possessed. It is believed that these suits were lost in their entirety during the Dropside Massacre. Prototype versions and copies of Vulcan schema were retained by isolated divisions of the Salamander Pyre Warden Artificer cohorts, eventually being rolled out where possible to shattered Legion forces alongside stolen traitor suits. Full-scale production had of course begun in the Legion's homeworld of Nocturne, being first employed by the so-called unscarred garrison of that planet in its defense, and later during the scouring of the Pale Stars. Upon the traitor side, it is known that through both his leverage as War Master and various other means, both subtle and infernal, Horus Lupercal had been aware of his brother Vulcan's efforts for many months ahead of the eventual bestowal. That being said, the proportional lack of 16th Legion Astartes in Saturnine plate during the Istvan III atrocity and the subsequent Dropside Massacre demonstrates that despite being aware of the work, Horus's agents had been unable to purloin for the War Master any sort of early schematic data that could have afforded the traitors a lead time on its manufacture. Despite this, his status as War Master nevertheless allowed Horus to furnish his Legion with a not insignificant quantity of suits for the massacre, provided through the Legion's original and massive stockpile, Dark Mechanicum contacts, and a vastly expanded Legion forge. Several companies were subsequently at the vanguard of the Legion during early heresy operations, typically led in force by Falcus Kybra, Lord of the Justeran Terminator Elite and member of the New Mournival. By the side of the 16th on Istvan V plodded the figures of the 14th Legion Death Guard. Owing to their staunch favoring of infantry portable firepower and attritional warfare, the Legion valued Saturnine Plate above almost all others. Mortarion and his sons prized their dwindling stocks of the original Phoebe-issued Saturnine Plate, and often went to great lengths to ensure its maintenance while other legions abandoned or sidelined its use. They were no doubt delighted at the bestowal, and it is recorded that significant efforts were made to retrofit as much of the Legion's stock as possible prior to the events in the Istvan system. This was largely supervised by Callus Typhon, the Legion's first captain, who is believed to have expended significant personal effort in disguising from his Primarch the exact degree of psychic potential his Saturnine-bearing subordinates actually possessed, in order to facilitate broader distribution throughout the Legion. The 12th Legion World Eaters had, since their reunification with Angron, almost wholly divested themselves of Saturnine armor stocks, owing to the extremely negative set of interactions the psychically demanding suits affected with the Legion's Butcher's Nails cranial implants. Accordingly, very little effort was expended by the dogs of Angron in the months between the bestowal and the heresy, the Primarch seeing no point in pursuing the technology over other, more robust and straightforward war gear. This changed, however, as the 12th plunged further into heretical debasement in the early years of the heresy. A sort of cult emerged, quite rapidly, following the Dropside Massacre, one whose members prized the suits for the resilience they offered, and taking a sort of twisted pleasure, or perhaps even meaning, from the amplifying effects they had on the psychotic rages the nails spiked within their furious cortexes. For the Third Legion Emperor's Children, their Saturnine plates had initially been a point of significant pride in the early Great Crusade. Following their almost extinction at the hands of a genetic plague unleashed by the Selenar gene cults, the Third Legion revered the suits for their ability to protect the very few veteran Astartes they possessed, safeguarding the Legion as it rebuilt. By the heresy, Saturnine plate within the Legion had taken on an almost entirely ceremonial role, reserved for special occasions or even simply as canvases for artistically inclined Astartes to express themselves upon. The outbreak of the heresy, and the new path the Legion began to walk, renewed their interest in the armor, largely for the levels of modifications Vulcan Schema opened the suits up to. The psychic links, for example, were of especial interest to the Legion's apothecaries, who went to great lengths to ensure neural interfaces could be linked via debased means to sensory and pleasure centers within the wearer's brains. The 17th Legion Wordbearers were likewise highly interested in the capabilities of the Saturnine Plate, although, interestingly, paid little heed to Vulcan's revised designs at first, preferring instead to explore other, altogether more infernal means of augmenting their elite warriors. Their rapid and gleeful descent into the realms of demonology, encompassing all aspects of its Legion's wargear, Lorgar's sons cannot be said to have anything approximating a unified approach to their experimentations. Individual Diabolists pursued their own aims and whims, striking bargains with a range of immaterial emanations of greater and lesser varieties. It would not be until the development of the so-called Fratus and their wholly corrupted Saturnine armor that the Wordbearers would begin to feel divisions of these Terminators en masse. Divisions that would soon be rendered nigh unrecognizable as their corrupted forms grew ever more horrific as the heresy ground on. The 4th Legion Iron Warriors saw their bellicose Primarch Perter Abo order a full and total refit of the Legion's Saturnine armor following the Saturnine bestowal, entirely along the lines as laid out in Vulcan Schema. The Legion had always prized the armor's capabilities, its durability perfectly suiting their preferred means of war-making. The Iron Fourth wasted no time in applying the upgrades as quickly as possible, and rushing new plate into production. But it is known from the surviving records that Vulcan's mastery of its technology sat very ill with Perturabo, who fumed over being unable to have succeeded in modifying the armor himself. Consequently, he ordered his Legion's tech marines to immediately begin research and development of new 4th Legion-specific modifications to the Saturnine plate, turning many batches of newly manufactured armor into brutal testbeds, merely to sate his own ego. The 8th Legion Night Lords were fractious at best, even before the onset of the Great Heresy, and their approach to the new Saturnine plate unfolded in accordance. It's unknown if any order of general manufacture came from the Night Haunter himself, or from one of his sons vying for leadership positions in the ever-shifting, brutal hierarchy of the Legion. Even now, more akin to warlords rather than captains, these senior Astartes vied for the initial production batches quite bitterly, while others forewent their claims entirely, preferring instead to place precedence on the arms and armor they could loot from captured loyalist, or indeed traitor, stockpiles. For the devastated 15th Legion Thousand Sons, the Saturnine Bestowal arrived well after Prospero had been rendered to naught but ash and rubble. The Legion's Forge World partnerships had been fully dissolved, with their holdings forcibly divested or forcibly incorporated into the realms of other Mechanicum polities, providing the Thousand Sons with no means of manufacturing new Saturnine plate at the outbreak of broader hostilities. However, owing to their devotion to the cause of the Librarius and high degree of psychic discipline, the 15th had been included within Vulcan's research and development from very early phases of his Saturnine overhaul. Thus, Thousand Sons elements, scattered across the galaxy at the time of the burning of Prospero, had a range of prototype suits at their disposal, each incorporating different elements of the Legion's cults into their capabilities. As the heresy ground on, and the 15th Legion claimed something of a manufacturing base to continue their participation within the war, these prototypes were delivered to surviving Thousand Sons enclaves galaxy-wide. Finally, it is verified by survivor reports that some of the first large-scale deployments of Saturnine armor following the Istvan V massacre were committed by the 20th Legion, Alpha Legion. That being said, the Sons of Alpharius had a proven track record of leaving no survivors within their wake, preferring to exterminate all traces of the foe and indeed their own involvement, forcing chroniclers to conclude that the 20th may have been deploying Saturnine divisions much earlier and simply leaving none alive to report on it. Much akin to the Legion's rapid and substantial adoption of the Mark VI Corvus power armor, the scale by which the Sons of Alpharius adopted what was still a rare and difficult to manufacture Terminator armor proves that the 20th had far more forge holdings than ever was officially reported. Regardless of how they came to possess the suits, the Alpha Legion deployed them to devastating effect, utilizing them in mass teleport assaults designed to utterly devastate key loyalist positions before effecting a rapid withdrawal. The tale of Saturnine armor is indelibly woven into the history of this tumultuous and horrific era of our Imperium. A product of the legacy of the Dark Age of Technology, military demands, and imperial politicking in almost equal measure, it could have ended up as one of the many technological footnotes on record, a specialized and rare system outstripped by the ferocious needs of an expanding empire. And indeed, this was its ultimate fate, for the Adeptus Astartes chapters of today simply do not field the armor beyond the most rare of relic suits. The Saturnine plate was given a stay of execution by Vulcan's masterful craft, the Primarch bending such phenomenal efforts to the rediscovery of lost arts in the process. But alas, 'twas a bitter gift indeed. One cannot help but wonder that if, by the vagaries of fate, the Primarch's bestowal had been delayed, the Loyalist Legions may have been handed quite the decisive technological advantage. Such musings are frivolous, of course, History does not make room for them, only for the sorrow and misery of the war that was to follow. Until such a time as one may further elucidate one's acolytes. Ave Imperator, Gloria in Excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @OculusImperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.